Dr. Brass Stacks.
Good morning.
Yes, it's 10:55. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Kellner.
You were involved in a discussion just now about the banking system. Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
And you know the banking system of Barbados has done us a favor, and we seem not to recognize it.
How so?
And because we concentrate too much on savings, and we treat savings, and you would have heard me with this on many occasions, as if savings are investments. What we need right now in this country, and what we needed for a long time, wouldn't be investments and not savings.
Government, let me ask you something. You don't think that the government bonds had the same effect?
Exactly.
Not the banks alone?
No, but I agree with you. And that is why, I'm very glad you raised that issue.
You were part of an administration that encouraged people to take out more and more of that government paper. And while at the same time, you now tell me that you recognize that it was a disincentive to investment otherwise in the country. You are one of the people who got up and defended to the hilt the national insurance scheme, taking its resources and pumping it into projects in Barbados.
You finish your hot air?
It's hot air? Ain't true.
No, you finish?
No.
You see, Mr. Ellis, unlike you, when I defend something, I have a logical reason for defending it. You see, one of the things that you have to recognize, and this is the myth, and I have listened very carefully, and that's why I was tempted today to help you. But it seems to me that before you allow me to help you, that you want to attack me. Let me say this to you. What we are saying in Barbados, and I want to tell you this, that local debt is serviced by revenue, not foreign exchange. And you all are mixing up foreign exchange issue and a local debt issue. Because you are giving the impression that when bonds were issued, that it created a foreign exchange problem.
I ain't talking about no foreign exchange.
It's a foreign exchange problem.
I haven't spoken about a foreign exchange.
What government did when the issue... Please listen, sir. I have listened to you for months, sir. Can you give me a chance to explain something to you, sir?
I'm listening to you, but I need to clarify for you that I'm not talking about the foreign exchange component. The foreign exchange component came into the question with the NIS when you, I heard you in my own two ears.
And I would make this point, or say that
we were not getting any money from diversifying our investment abroad, which when I saw the actuarial review, it didn't support what you were saying. But anyhow, bottom line is you're saying to me now that the commercial banks are doing us a favor by charging us all the fees and trying to run us from them, and that we should be investing. The only point I was making to you is that government bonds, which you, as a member of the former administration, contributed to the promotion of the idea that people should have bought government paper. And they bought it because they considered that it was safe. And because it was safe, that too must be taken into the consideration when you say that money was not available for investment as well.
You're finished now, sir?
Yes, sir.
And I want to tell you that I have no reason to apologize for that, because there's common sense in it. And let me explain why there's common sense in it. Whenever government issued bonds and they were purchased by locals, what they did was to ensure that that money was not available for people to buy imports. On top of that, that money stopped government from having to go overseas to borrow, then to have to pay back the principal in foreign exchange and the interest in foreign exchange, creating a bigger current account problem for the government. The
critical issue is what did the government do? The question is, what did the government do with the money, though?
Well, they don't care what they did with the money, because if they had bought it overseas, it would have been the negative effect.
You know that it does matter. You know, Mr. Kelman, that it does matter what they did with the money.
Problem. You need something to listen to me and stop trying to make...
I've heard enough of you. I have heard enough of you to know basically where you're going.
No,
so you've just dismissed what I said. You said that it doesn't matter what they spend it on. Well, I don't know that other people talk like that.
That might be a flip of the hand. But what I'm saying...
Okay, yeah,
you,
admit that.
A slip of the tongue. That once it is spending, the important thing is always better to borrow from the local market because they might not have used bonds in. They might have gone overseas and borrowed the money. And I would prefer them to have the money from the local people because you can use taxes to service that.
But you cannot Kelman, use if taxes I take my, if I borrow money from the bank and bought ice with it and the ice melted, I would have wasted the money. Buying ice, the equivalent of buying ice is just to some extent just putting it in recurrent expenditure.
It depends on how you look at the ice, sir. Anyhow, let us go on.
Anyhow, finish your point.
Yeah, and one of the things that you do not realize, and you need to acknowledge this, because you seem to believe that everything that you speak happened within the last 8 years.
I do.
The truth is, Ms. Ellis, when we allow foreign companies to come in here, and you would have heard me with this, and you would have asked me to go and bring the proof and all that foolishness. When we allow foreign companies to come in here and turn our investors into savers, I have a situation now where we have $8 billion sitting in savings or sitting in bonds, whatever you want to put it, instead of people having shares. That was a very bad mistake. Because
Shares where, though?
Look, you had Quartz, you had BS&T, you had Lightning Power. If you go through, you would have seen a situation that business previously used to buy shares and banks, all of them. And now that money that they had in shares now sitting in banks idle. Why outsiders?
Well, as a former government minister, you should be in a position to help us understand what has driven Barbadians in that direction. What do you think has caused that?
They had no choice.
Why is that?
Because when the companies came in, they did not issue shares to them. They just gave them cash. There are a lot of people who have money in the banking system now who would have preferred to have shares, sir. And if you want, this is
when you said the companies came in. What companies came in?
You seem not to want an intelligent discussion of this matter.
What companies came in? When you said when the companies came in?
All the companies that bought out the local companies. You want me to identify, but I'm not going to get involved in the Pacific, sir.
So they wanted cash. They deserved shares. They deserve shares rather than cash. That's what you are saying.
A lot of Barbadians who would have
but you can't escape my telling you this and asking you. Don't you believe that?
Embarrass yourself if you go down that road.
Permit me to, though. Let me ask you this. You sit down and you realize that this was happening. Let's say banks, which was sold to the major company abroad. If you recognize this, then what was it that could have been done to help create the enabling environment for that?
Well, one of the things that is why I have always advocated the cabinet that we had to find companies, create companies, and especially in the productive sector, to get people to change that money from being in the banking system.
Who was to create the companies? The government?
The government.
And what was the pushback that you got from cabinet colleagues to that idea?
Pushback. The government was moving to build hotels and so on. And if you check the plan was to later on to offload some of those shares to the same people. For example, let me give you a good example.
That plan was articulated to the members of the public, though? I never heard it.
Go and look at Sam Lords. You will see that the plan of Sam Lords was to divest Sam Lords later on. And that is always good old economic policy. Because you see, I listen to y'all, you know. I now got my chance to talk to you because I've heard the old moderators parading. For the simple reason, old economics has taught me that government must always get involved in the what the private sector is not doing, and that when the private sector is ready for it, government shall offload. And that is why I don't mind people talking about government divesting. I have no problem with government divesting because the simple reason, the role of a government is to divest its assets and use the money to create new assets and new opportunities. And that is why when I heard you all criticizing the past government, both Sam Lords and so on, it was clear to me, and selling of the Hilton, it's clear to me that you all did not understand that the government is doing the role to take some of that
listen,
and to create productive
Is it really fair to project the sale of the Hilton as part of this planned divestment to the people?
Of course.
Or was it a money grab? Was it articulated? Hold on, Mr. Kelman. All two of you can't talk at the same time. No. Let me make the point. Because I have heard this articulated time and time again, even by supporters of the party, as an attempt to bolster Barbados's flagging foreign reserves.
That was, Ms. Ellis, that was the main, but that was not the only reason.
Who are these Bajans?
Because we were focusing.
Who are these Bajans who would have been beneficiaries of the sale of the Hilton?
But you see, Ms. Ellis, you need to go and study something called the opportunity cost of doing things.
Who are the Bajans who would have been beneficiaries while at the same time being able to bring the foreign exchange in?
Mr. Ellis, you sell the Hilton, and then you go and, like, for example, let me give you an example. The Amman brand, and you would have heard me touting this, was one of the best, even in the Barbados, when the Barbados Labour Party was in government. I've always made the point that we could not afford to get rid of the Amman brand because of its pull. And this present government, even though it sold Amman in St. Peter, was looking at other hotels that were not in the productive sector at the present moment to use the Amman brand, and the sale of the Hilton would have helped us not only to boost the foreign reserves, but would have given us the revenue to help build up the tourism industry in Christchurch and in St. Philip. And that's what you call good old economics. But all of a sudden, we want to practice this new economics that believes that the only way you can boost foreign exchange is going and borrowing overseas. You cannot boost foreign exchange by borrowing. You have to boost foreign exchange by possessing sectors.
Do you stop to think, Mr. Kelman?
Of course I do.
Just hold on.
You,
no. About the fact that there's one thing to say that you're going to borrow locally and not abroad. But whether you borrow locally or abroad, don't you still have to service that debt? Wasn't the problem facing the government the ability to service the debt and honor its obligations? That's why we got something like, what, $400 million owed to different people in the country all like now?
Ms. Ellis, can I ask you, please?
Yes, please.
To answer you, servicing a local debt is done by you and I, from taxes, etc. Okay? So local debt is not a problem. Government can.
So how is it that the government built up such arrears to so many people in the country?
Because, as I have been saying over and over, our problem in this country is that we give the myth that the country is overtaxed. The country is not overtaxed. It's just that we are using the wrong tax systems to get what we want.
So the government was at fault?
Well, the government and the advisors.
We are talking about the fact that when you left office, when you left office, you were owing all of that money, which you said could easily have been addressed by taxation, but we were taxed, and it still wasn't addressed.
And you want to hear something, Ms. Ellis? Because of a point I also made to you earlier. Because people who were productive, we turned them into savers. And now those people are a diminishing return for the economy and not a multiplier effect for the economy. Because previously, people who were helping to build the economy are now helping to reduce the economy. How because so? There are no servers. I have a negative instead of a positive.
Well, as I said to you, look, I have articulated the view that the issue here with respect to government bonds may ultimately turn out to be a blessing in disguise for Barbadians. Because as a woman, she said to me on Monday it was, she said the money was so sweet that all you had to do, once you had a certain level of investment in the government paper, all you had to do is sit down and live off the interest. That meant that those people, once they are able to do that, no problem. Somebody said to me that a man was getting so much money out of it over the years, he said at one point, I will never rent out a house again. So in those circumstances, we agree that savings, while they come across as a positive, if you do nothing with the money and if you create an environment where people can easily plant their money there, and in this instance for the government to use, rather than for the people themselves to look for creative opportunities, then we have a problem. That's why so much of Barbados is owned by people from abroad now.
Let me say this to you, huh? You threw one at me just now, and you didn't give me opportunity to respond to it. I will not apologize for the Barbados Labour Party or the Democratic Labour Party using the funds from the National Insurance Fund instead of sending the money overseas to proper other people's economy.
But you misrepresented to the Barbadian public from the speech that I heard what was actually being earned by the money that was invested abroad, because it was projected as though we weren't earning anything on it.
When I heard
the then director of National Insurance speak, and when I looked at the actuarial review or the report, one of the two, it wasn't saying that.
Miss Ellis, you know why it wasn't saying that? And I'll let you, I look different. You were looking at investments that were tied. In other words, investments that National Insurance had previous years that were long-term and at a fixed rate. What we were speaking about is new money having to be invested overseas to get 0%. You see, don't get mixed up in the issue, Mr. Ellis. If you just look at actuarial report and just look at the returns, without looking to see when the money was invested, what I was speaking about is the current situation where overseas people were running from the same thing you were talking about, and you were advocating that we should take the money and send it overseas to help proper other people's economy. Why ours was
no,
suffering.
No, no, that's not what the, that's what we call that's not what I was advocating. You know what I was advocating? You know what I was advocating? Let me be clear about what I was advocating. Diversification of the portfolio.
But David,
that's what it was. In other words, don't put all your eggs in one basket. They got some people out there who put almost all of their money in government paper, and know what happened to them? They lick up.
There's no logical reason why this should be happening to them. Because
you all encouraged them to do it and gave them the impression that it was safe to do so.
No, but you see, this is a mistake. You are missing.
And did not tie the safety to the macro economic performance.
The best save, I am still saying, there's no logical reason why government bonds will have to be seen how they are seen now. There's no logical reason once we have people working and living and investing in Barbados. Government bonds are not serviced by foreign exchange, sir.
But we never said that.
You are making, sir.
No, but I ain't saying that.
You are behaving as if it is, as if we are impacting our outsiders.
Mr. Kelman, I don't know that I have said anything that can be interpreted thus.
If Barbadians had invested the money, let me give you another example. When I was...
Let me ask you one question before you go any further. Why you take so long to call back, to call the call-in program?
Why it took so long, Miss Ellis?
Yeah.
Because unlike you and the others, there's always a time factor to allow government to have an opportunity. I'm not going to do like what happened in 2008. I will not criticize one government or one opposition and come and do the same thing. But what took me long is to hear you exposing these things and sounding as if you are an expert on these matters when you're wrong. That's what had me.
But I'm glad you confront me, because I can tell you something. You're still saying that I have said something that I haven't.
Miss Ellis, let me give you a good example. I know you will not remember this. When I was Minister of Housing, We had a project at Lancaster. You remember that? A commercial project. You remember that one, sir?
You mean that's the one that you're not... that's the one that you... That you that's when you sell the land to Chevette?
No, I did not sell the land. You see, here you go again with this myth. I never sold land or the Ministry of Housing and Lands or NHC. Never sold land to Chevette.
What was it again?
NHC sold land to three buyers, and it was not Chevette.
Oh, but it turned out to be Chevette ultimately,
had
though.
A debt that they could not pay. And they swapped it to a private developer who turned around and sold it to Chevette. And I've said this 1,000 times, but yet still, you are going to come up with this myth again.
Somebody tell me here, you talking, this man tell me you're talking a lot of stuff here. He says the markets were investment grade and people were making good money in hedge funds, etc. He said you are making it seem that investing would put it in a bank overseas and not get interest. The stock markets were at an all-time high.
You going back again to invest. Investment is not putting money in a savings account or in bonds.
Somebody wants to find out something from you, Mr. Kelman. If the debt restructuring... This guy wants to find out whether the debt restructuring was necessary.
Yes, debt restructuring was necessary, but not the quantum, the how it was done. Because I will have to be a liar to say it was not like that, because... I personally, in cabinet, have always made the point that we had to be very careful how we allow the national insurance and bondholders to benefit at the expense of country Barbados.
Hold on a minute. Would you concede that a large part of that debt that you agreed was to be restructured was domestic debt?
Exactly. I agree. And that is why we can afford, because my premise on it, if we are in a crisis now...
Why would it be necessary to restructure it, therefore?
Because, as I said, the way I saw it, that if the country is in a crisis and you have been good to your people who have savings with you, that you talk to them and tell them, look, the country has a problem, and we have been good to you, because right now you are getting 7%. And the country, and you, if you look at the opportunity cost with the banking system and so on, you might only get 1%. So allow us.
Wasn't that crisis in the government's ability to repay the debt?
Ms. Ellis, the government ability to pay local debt is always good. The government ability to pay for in debt.
So what part of the crisis impacted on the debt that would cause the restructuring?
Ms. Ellis, there's no problem in paying local debt, Ms. Ellis.
No, you haven't answered my question. You agree that there was the need to restructure. You agree that a large portion of that debt was domestic. You say there was a crisis that caused the restructuring. Explain what that crisis was then.
Because we were increasing our expenditure by paying interest rates higher than we should.
Interest rates to whom?
Sending a negative of our economy that we did not have to send that negative.
Part of the interest you were paying would have been to the domestic
expenditure.
People
who did not necessarily have to face the international agencies.
Would you accept that part of the interest that you're complaining about would have been interest to the domestic creditors?
But that's obvious. Local debt is principal plus interest, Ms. Ellis.
So it comes right back to the inability to pay. It came back to the inability to pay to repay.
And I will say to you, Ms. Ellis,
the debt that was owed.
Inability to repay local debt.
Okay.
Your problem is always your ability to earn enough for an exchange to service your foreign debt. But as long as you have people living in the country, you never have a problem of servicing local debt.
And of course, the interest rates would not have been impacted. Hold on, your domestic.
I have a point to try to push me away from it.
Your domestic debt was in no way impacted by the downgrades either. The interest on the domestic debt.
Sure. not you can ignore the downgrazement as it relates to the domestic debt, but you cannot ignore the foreign because you have no control over them. But you have control over your local situation. A country is in charge of itself, but it's not in charge of outsiders. And that's the mistake you are making all the time. Anyhow, let me get back to the Lancaster point I'm making. Rain Supercenter constructed their building, and a lot of retailers were put out to sea. I, as Minister of Housing, got cabinet to agree that it might be a good thing if those people who had money in the banking system will come to Lancaster. And I said cabinet, not that there was a cabinet, a formal discussion, which is just as good. Anyhow, to come to Lancaster, buy the property at Lancaster, and below, accommodate those people, because when you really think about it, a lot of people operating on the West Coast in the tourism industry are part of the productive sector. Just like how we ignore the uses of taxi men. The most important source service in Barbados are not the hotels, you know, sir, or the restaurants, or the taxi men. Because if there's one sector that you can guarantee that we will make money from when a ship comes here or a plane comes here, is the taxi men. And we ignore these people, and that's why we always have a problem.
But I don't understand what I got to do with the Lancaster thing. Let me put you on hold and come back to you, because you got a lot to say. Hold for a few more minutes. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Oh, I thought Mr. Kelman was still there.
I thought he was still there, but he's gone.
Okay, before I get, I want to say one little thing about Mr. Kelman, but first things first. A couple of days ago, I heard something on your station in the news, and I said, well, I have to call brass tacks and thank them. Because, to me, brass tacks really imbalanced.
To you?
So I said, well,
to you, brass tacks imbalanced? Let me tell you something.
Let me
can't be talking about brass tacks.
Don't treat me like Kelman now.
No, I can tell you why. Because people like you bombard this program daily. Indeed, there are people who tell me that we spend far more time these days with people who are known supporters of the Democratic Labour Party than anybody else. So if you say it lacks balance, you surely don't mean that it lacks balance from a DLP perspective.
May I say something now, Ms. Ellis? You remember I told you directly what caused me to be a caller on WhatsApp?
Does not matter. Let's think about not being balanced.
Ms. Ellis, we are not. I agree.
That was then. This is now.
Just a minute, Ms. Ellis. Don't rush it. You wasn't saying what you're saying now when they had 10 callers one after one, all BLPs, Lambias in the government before.
You know the difference here? The only reason I have said what I've said is because you said the program imbalanced.
Listen to
me. If a BLP had told me that back then, I would have the same response.
Ms. Ellis, you don't wait to hear what I had to say that I away about what I say. I want to know why you're so jumpy. Oh, you just dealt with Mr. Kelman. Cool down, Mr. Ellis. What I wanted to say is this. I call to thank DOB because when it was cancelled, I'm not advertising it, I heard it at 5 o'clock, 5:30 morning. And I said to myself, DOB discussing that, but I never heard of DOB in my life.
Discussing what?
Well, let me go directly then. The lectures was cancelled, and the morning at 5:30, I even didn't know nothing about it. I heard it on VOD.
You heard it as a news story saying it was cancelled.
Mr. Ellis, just take it easy when I'm trying to explain. We used to have the lectures all the time. I have never heard nothing about a lecture on VOD. I heard it on CBC, but not on VOD. So I said it to myself, well, how come that? Because there's a cancellation, VOD bring it over. So this week now when I hear VOD, broadcast that is restarting. I said, okay, they're balanced now.
Well, let me say something to you.
You find out where I bought the word balance.
Listen.
Listen.
You try to control this program from where you sit. Let me tell you something. I think you should take your cue from whoever is the moderator of the program. Let me say this to you. Because you don't hear something, it does not mean that it does not happen and has not been aired. And I am asserting to you that from time to time, depending upon how the particular journalist sees the importance of this subject and who is delivering it, it has made news and will continue to make news
in
the last 5 years. And if you don't hear, you may not hear at 5:30 every day in the morning, but you might hear it in some other newscast. And not only that, let me just make this point, because you are not being reasonable to the station. Even if, because we are not necessarily here promoting this is going to happen. You know where the news comes? The news comes out of when a lecture is delivered. And it is based upon what is said. And I cannot accept from you or anybody else that the station has been so one-sided that when people have made their presentations before that particular gathering of the Democratic Labour Party, that their speeches have not been carried in the news. You are being grossly one-sided. You.
Okay, let's say that I am. Okay. Miss Ellis, are you there?
I'm listening to you. But if you think for 1 minute that by taking that kind of slant, you are going to get us to bend over backwards to do your bidding, you are dead wrong.
Okay, you're saying that one too. Mr. Ellis, I got to ask a question. Fair. Answer me fairly.
Yes, I will.
If that gentleman that just was speaking to you was a BLP, you would have dealt with him in the same way that you dealt with him? Bring up things that all of us know.
Let me tell you something. You know, you don't seem to know.
No, you're asking a question.
I shouldn't be answering that question. You know why? Because there are enough people in Barbados who have listened to this program. They have listened to me over the years. They know basically what my approach has been. And if a Barbados Labour Party person that was in power for 10 years with the same kind of background, with the same kind of information, I would ask the same question.
So
it does not matter.
You are saying to me, just now that you told him about the land you said to Shafet, you didn't know that he didn't sell the land to Shafet. He was on your station about 8 times correcting that statement.
I didn't hear it. I can't hear everything. It's the same way you can't hear everything in the news.
Okay, let me move on quick, because I got to go, right? And I hope, knowing how hard Dennis Johnson likes to work, that at 12:30 you will hand over and join the dear loving people. But get into my issue here now with you.
But you thought you already got the speech and everything. You know everything. He don't need to. Once you're there, he doesn't have to go. You can say send him the information.
I heard you earlier went back and tracked back to Miss Garner in the election. You remember?
Yes, because I thought he was listening to it up to this morning.
Okay, are you going back with both B and D? You know, I like the word balance. You're going back at what was said by B's and what was said by D's?
Yes, the problem, but of course, by the very nature of what I do for a living, in as much as I do this program and I also sometimes do interviews and that sort of thing, and I do a regular business program and all of that, I am forced to go and check what people have said before.
Okay, can I ask you to do something for the listeners, Amanda, then you can give us a little idea of what you heard? I will let you to go back when the government was trying to introduce, or I could say, give more power to the policemen. Do you remember that thing?
Yes.
Then they found them, you hear me?
Yes. Okay. And it is a valid question to put to the Prime Minister and the Attorney General today. If you're going to send people to Crab Hill, if you're going to use the Defence Force and the police to cordon off Crab Hill from early this morning, how does that square with the objection that you gave to the police powers that the Democratic Labour Party introduced? Valid question.
Okay, well, thank you that you don't have to wait to Monday. Because what I wanted you to do for me, I tell you now, because I asked it before I asked. I want you to go back.
But it's obvious there. It is there. And the point I'm making to you is that as long as it is something there to be put to the government, it will be put to them.
But, Mr. Ellis, you don't understand why I'm so skeptical about a lot of things.
You're skeptical because you're so biased.
Okay, you can say that I'm biased. Nobody talk about that. What I want you to do, I want you to go back, though, and check what the opposition leader, Prime Minister, said in Rotley, and what the member for Christchurch South said about what the government was trying to do to barbarians. Go back and check. Now I hear no enough about what's going on, wherever it's going on. But now I understand that some of the same thing that the government was trying to do happening today. But Mr. Ellis, before I leave you, because you know I got to move on fast.
I can imagine. You know, Ellis, once you go to that gathering.
Why the moderators at VOB, including you, although you're not as solid on pushing it as much, why you all believe that those folks who took a chance in something that for all my life was thought to be the safest way of saving your money, why you all crying down what they did?
Right, crying them down.
You are giving the impression, when I listen, it sounds to me like those people, you know, one moderator and a caller, called it greedy. They ain't there because it was greedy.
Well, I'm not going to be party to that. I'm not going to be party to that. Because I wasn't holding that position either when people were criticizing the investors in Clico at being greedy.
Because I know
some of the same people who call the Clico investors greedy are some of the head ones who have now been touched by this particular measure.
Do not check certain callers when they talk. You will correct me and Tracus Senatory and everything.
Well, you said that I am not involved in it. I tell you that I check everybody.
I heard the statsman with a moderator.
Right.
Say
I cannot account for any other body, any other moderator's position.
I wanted to be corrected, so I'm putting it out there now. I heard the statsman and a moderator on Brass Tacks saying that nobody at Clico get back a cent up to now. And the moderator said, and I got a policy with him, not a cent they get back.
But the moderator was therefore saying that he could categorically state that he didn't get any money.
But no, Edith. He said nobody, including himself, he and the statsman.
But I don't know the conversation, and I can't get too involved in it because I can't.
I call the statsman name. But no, let me tell you this here. The former Minister of Finance for 8 years take all types of licks from bastards and the Barbarous Labour Party fighting to get the policyholders at Clico get back something of their investment. Late last year, I heard the minister and the lady who speaks on behalf of the policyholders praising the government for reaching as far as I've reached. And people start to collect money from either January or February this year. It is only because our new prime minister defaulted in paying the bills because it was tied up with some bonds and things.
I got some friends who had some money in Clico, and I speak to them almost every week, and they have not had a cent yet.
I got friends that gay.
They have not had a cent yet, and there has been this question mark over exactly when. This is even before the default issue came to the fore.
Mr. Ellis,
so don't tell me that I don't know that. I can't go and say that nobody got. So but I know that there are a lot of people who are still.
You are in the news media, Mr. Ellis. You are in the news media.
Yes, please.
And you don't know nobody that received money between, let's say, either January, February this year?
You know what I just tell you? I am not in a position.
How am I letting me know?
I am not in a position to say that nobody got. But I am saying to you that there are people I know who have had none.
Yeah, I know people who ain't get yet, too.
Right.
But.
So people I'm not here to get caught up in somebody else saying that nobody got and that sort of thing.
The lady that speaks on behalf of the policyholders also came on your station and admit that payments have started.
All right, sir. Well, let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, good morning, David.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, how are you keeping?
I'm okay.
Well, I want to be short and brief and to the point this morning. You're a last caller, right, Debbie? You know, I'm a caller too, so I don't want to be critical of callers. But you know the truth is, right? He calls this program, and it really to the last 2 weeks, he's been calling this program on a daily basis, pretty right, not on a daily, but very often, to defend the indefensible, right? We had an administration, David, that took this country to the brink of destruction, as far as I'm concerned. And he calls every minute to defend that, right? You know, I have not heard not one member of the last administration calling this program or even writing articles to defend. I understand, right, David? But truthfully, right, the one person that I heard made a comment that they were not covered in the face of what happened in the last administration, look today where he is. But that caller, he calls this program every minute to defend the indefensible. And, you know, I'm serious, David. I'm sick and tired of him. Thank you, David.
Somebody says here that payments on CLECO policies that have matured before the assets were transferred to ResLife have started to be made. And this person says that there are one such person. All right. But they have been told that payments on the other policies, which they had and they canceled last year, will commence 4 years down the road, with 10% being paid in year four and the remainder over a seven-year period. Because my recollection is that there was, because as I said, one of my friends has been touched by it, and my recollection is that it was being phased out, over a period, okay? Over a period. And that person got no money up to the last time we had spoken. There were two of them. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Ellis, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, very well. What about you?
I'm okay.
Well, listen, nothing to do with the economy today. I actually you were talking about banking earlier.
Yes.
I wanted to relay a story that actually happened to me in a bank. But before I go there, would you allow me a little levity? I'm still, but water's still coming out of my eyes. You had a caller earlier. Mr. Ellis, I had no idea that you were as good as Sunil Narine. I really had no idea, because you had the particular man at the wicket playing bat and pad all the time. Mm. Like, even when you bowl him a few long hops, he almost get out playing bat and pad. I was here dying with laughter listening to it. I just want to mention that. That is just a little joke, and former minister, if you're listening, it's all in jest. Okay? Oh, the true story, Mr. Ellis. But I didn't know you were that good a spinner in truth. Anyhow, the true story. I am in the habit of doing a night deposit bike for a particular person and dropping it in the night deposit. On this particular day, last week, Tuesday, I think it was, my mother, who was a 92-year-old, asked me if I was going to the bank, and I said to her, yes, I was going to the night deposit. She asked if I would go in and cash a check for her and make a deposit for her at the same time. Well, no problem. She can't go, of course. So I went down to the bank and decided, well, I won't bother to drop the bag in. I'll take the bag in, let them deal with that inside also. I got there, got to the teller. The bag was taken. That was taken care of. I handed the teller a check to be cashed for my mother. Check was taken. Check was cashed. Cash given to me. I handed a deposit to that account that the cash just came from for my mother again, and was told, oh, we can't take the deposit. I said, but why not? Because I'm a third party. I said, but you just gave me cash from the same account. Why is it you can't take the deposit? I said, I know that sometime earlier in the year you said you're not dealing with people who don't have accounts with you, but I have an account with you. Well, that's changed now. You're not taking deposits from any third party. So I asked, I said, but my mother's 92 years old. How's she supposed to get this thing worked out? It was a shrug of shoulders, and that was the story. I decided not to say anything because I knew the telly. Pretty nice person. It's not his fault. I just had to come and tell you that.
Now, what do you see as the full implications of that, therefore?
Mr. Ellis, I really don't know what the implications of that could possibly be. I could understand it if it didn't apply to a 92-year-old. You're forcing me to the ATM machines. Simple as that.